Time to kick off the final hour of Monday's Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game Nashville app. We had a text on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, about the speculation of the lack of potato cakes in local Nashville Arby's restaurants. And, well, who best to have on to discuss this, and, of course, some Tennessee sports, as more than Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., a show I'm pretty familiar with. Darren, how are we doing this morning?
Good morning, Dr. Phil. Joe, good morning. How you guys doing?
Hello.
We're good. And Joe has not been caught up on the potato cake bit on our show.
I've heard it. I just wondered. I didn't hear the initial. Like, I was like, how far back does this go? So, but I got to tell you, Darren. I'll give you an admission. I'll ask you something. I never had potato cakes at Arby's.
Wow.
I had the curly fries. Gosh, I feel bad about it. But
Mayday, we're going down.
Like, explain them to me.
You just came out of the gates with, I've never had potato cakes.
I feel bad.
And how are we going to recover from this segment? It's just like the greatest thing ever. I mean, well, at least at Arby's when they had them.
You agree, Elijah?
I've never had potato cakes either. But from my understanding, they're like the hash browns at McDonald's. Just like round potato.
Okay.
Fried things.
It's Bo Rounds on steroids. It's Bo Rounds, with a little bit of Jose Canseco, little Mark McGuire thrown in there. That's all it is.
So
it's fantastic.
So you like potatoes. We all like potatoes. We don't all, but for the most
potatoes.
Part.
Not like Ryan Porth, but I mean, I like potatoes.
So have you had corned beef hash?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
Okay. All right. So you are a more well-rounded human than me. And your opinion of corned beef hash?
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. If you've tried it, I feel like you've liked it.
That's the floor. That's baseline. I mean, yeah.
We're all good. That's all I said.
Except for me.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good with it. I mean, it's not like my go-to, but I'm good with it.
That's fair. But, Darren, we've talked a lot on our program as well about this Tennessee Vol baseball team. Vince comes on every Monday at noon, Smoky Mountain Rain. And the Smoky Mountain Rain is technically, I guess, tears. Happy tears for the folks that are dancing on the grave of this Tennessee baseball team, and sad tears for the Vol fans who have fallen in love with this baseball team, and rightfully so, because it's one of the best regular seasons we've ever seen from a college baseball team. It might be the most polarizing college baseball team that I can certainly remember, and they didn't make it to Omaha. Notre Dame takes 2 of 3. What are your initial takeaways from the Fighting Irish pulling off that upset and this team kind of falling out of the postseason early?
You know, got a chance this trip, by the way. I just got back from my yearly trip, 15 years, just 1 year closer to me dying. I love this trip, but like it sheds several years off of my life,
which is why we do
every year. I look forward to it every year, but I just realize I'm a little bit closer to death every year that I do this trip. But we listened to Vince and John Wilkerson in the car, and then we stopped in Cookeville and decided to sit down and eat so we could take in and consume the game for a while, and we did that, and then we listened to it on the ride home, and it was just obviously shocking. You just the whole time, I don't know how you guys felt, but up until the seventh inning, you're thinking, well, they're in the lead, they're in control, they're going to win this game, right? Like there just never was a doubt. Like they're up. I know it's not a huge lead, but they're up, they're in control, and they're going to win. This is how it works. Yeah, it wasn't easy. That'll be the storyline. Like, get ready. This is what it's going to be like in Omaha. It's not going to be easy. You got a target on your back. You just found that out. Notre Dame took you to the brink, But you found a way to win after losing the first game, and then the seventh inning happened, and then the eighth inning, and then game over. Thanks for playing. And you just sit there, and you're like, wow, I can't believe this team didn't get to Omaha. But here's the deal. When you wear that image, when you're proud of that image, that's fine. And that's probably what got you to 57 wins this year, even though we know they're an extremely talented team. You also have to eat it when it doesn't work. Look, I deal with it on a much, 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 much smaller scale in 10-year travel ball. I mean, there's just certain teams, certain coaches, to be honest. And look, they're that way because they usually – not usually. They have a fantastic team, right? And that's their personality. And And a lot of times that works even before the game begins. I mean, sometimes they've already scared the opponent out at our age. But let me tell you, when they hit the rough patch or when they get beat, nobody's giving them a shoulder to cry on. Everybody is secretly going, well, in this case, nobody's secret about it. I mean, the other fan bases are very, very loud about it. But in our world, everybody's like, yeah, good, good, jerks. You deserve to lose. Nobody's rooting for you. You're a tremendous team, but, you know, you act sometimes like jack wagons, and so nobody's rooting for you. But overall, it works for them. They have tons of success. So getting back to the big boy baseball, look, they just have to eat it. I mean, there's no way I would have ever thought this team would not make it to Omaha. Did I think it was going to be the easiest thing ever? Although I have been reading things on social media and our group text. Apparently, Elijah did say it was going to be easy. But anyway, I digress. I know he's probably already brought that up. But look.
You're welcome, Notre Dame.
Maybe they use this as what Arkansas did last year. They clearly used it as motivation. What Notre Dame used as motivation last year, because both of those teams were really good, especially Arkansas. Nobody could see them not getting to Omaha, and they didn't get out of their own super region that they were hosting, and everybody had them as a lock to get into the College World Series. Maybe Tennessee can use that, and I'm sure they will, and I know Vitello was already talking about it after the game, but they'll use that as motivation and, you know, make sure that doesn't happen next year.
Jack wagon is just a great word, by the way.
I love that
underutilized
word. I love it.
So Darren, when you just think of the Tennessee fan right now, how do you think this one stacks up? I mean, there's a list of disappointments, you know, in recent years, but how do you think this one stacks up with some of those?
You know, look, my wife is a UT grad, and I have to tread lightly because, look, she's been fractured over the years from being a Tennessee fan. And so I understand it because I've lived with it for 17 years in my house. Okay, we've been together for 17 years. And so I understand that at times early on in the relationship, I would, you know, I kind of had fun with her when these things would happen. I no longer have fun with her about that. I don't say anything when it happens. In fact, I'll let her bring it up. Luckily, she left town before I got back home from out of town. So I'm not going to say a word. And my guess is by the time she gets back from the lake down in Alabama, she is definitely not going to bring anything up, and it'll be forgotten in this house, and I'll just leave it at that. I do think there is a portion of the fan base that's like that because – there's a part of me that understands, like, gosh, you know, like, how much longer can you keep just going to that well and just beating them down? Because they've had a lot of tough luck in sports. I mean, when I moved here and growing up in Lexington, remember, I grew up in SEC country. And, you know, Tennessee, they certainly had their day, man. They were the cat's meow. Between Pat Summitt and the Lady Vols and Philip Fulmer, the machine he had going. Well, Tennessee's football program was even successful before him, so they've had a lot of winning and success, and then there's been this, which is basically how long I've been with my wife. It's been this, and this has been marred with a lot of disappointment. So, Joe, I don't say anything at home, and there's a part of me that feels bad because there's no way – look, they finally thought they had risen up, right? Like, this is the breakthrough team. This is going to get all of sports going again. Like, this program, this team. And they didn't even get to the College World Series.
Yeah. I was thinking of, like, disappointing Tennessee, like, sports losses. And I think this is up there with 2001 SEC Championship football against LSU, where that team was probably every bit as good as the 98 team.
Oh, I was at that game.
Yeah. Yeah, that ended up winning it all.
No question.
Like, that's up there for me, but I'll pivot to another one of your favorite topics, A.J. Brown and his Twitter usage.
We saw
that in our group text last night. Obviously, that group text involves Derek Mason, so he is a central part of this story that when A.J. Brown says, "For the love of God, I was the best receiver to ever play for your franchise. Shut up and move on. You mad at the wrong person." That we can have some exception here, and I know you probably have some thoughts on that maybe AJ Brown was pushing it a little bit with, again, responding to more Titans fans, just simply not hitting the mute button, and B, maybe being a little off base with being the best wide receiver the Titans have ever had.
I'm going to say my piece now because Derek Mason's going to be on the first 2 hours of the show, and I'm probably going to sit back and let him talk more than me.
Fair.
So he'll be on the first half of the show today. You know, my point, this is just, I don't know how this got so sideways so fast. And maybe this is a prelude of things to come, and maybe John Robinson's going to be the one with the Cheshire Cat smile in the end because he maybe saw this coming too, or maybe is happy that it played out this way because, and he doesn't have $100 million wrapped up in him. But my words to AJ Brown would be, for the love of God, would you please move on? I mean, please. Like, dude, you got your money. You got what you wanted. Stop playing the victim and move on. You got paid, okay? Stop blaming the Titans. Stop acting like you had nothing to do with anything, which you absolutely did. Stop fighting. Oh, what, you're surprised that the fan base that you did this to, they're coming after you on social media? Like, if we need to explain this to you, this experiment in Philadelphia is going to end very poorly. Very poorly, because if you think Titans fans on social media or Twitter are a pain in the ass, well, wait till you get in Philly and you're not producing with that contract. Good luck to you, my friend. I mean, AJ, seriously, like you know, this whole camp was poor, man, poor. Like, this isn't about you and the fan base. This was about the kids, and you just bailed. Shame on you. And now it's like you're fighting with the fan base that you left, that you can't understand why they're coming after you. Like, dude, you got paid. Move on. Like, I don't know what my guess is today. This is going to end really bad in Philadelphia. I don't know. Maybe he rises up and he becomes the receiver we think is. But I've said it from jump. I wouldn't have paid him that money because he hasn't proven it yet. We just think he's really good. Well, at some point, you do have to prove it with the stats, do you not, guys? I mean, I'm sorry, 70 catches doesn't get me running to the Brinks truck to start it up in a season.
That's just 4 years, $100 million.
We don't have time for me to argue back with you on his quality as a player, but I totally agree with you on the Twitter and move it on. It's a complete waste of time. But I did want to quickly, Darren, get into something we should all be excited about this week. And look, I was big with the Rangers. I really liked the Rangers. I love that story. I wanted them to win that series. I thought it would have been great. But you know what? What a series we got here. How excited are you for this? And first blush, Colorado-Tampa Bay, who do you like?
I'm picking Colorado just because this is my last shot to be proven right on going against Tampa. So I've been wrong every round. I've gone against them every round. And yes, Joe, you know, I took the Rangers as well. And I just thought they were not going to be able to duplicate it. Three times will not be a charm. It's not going to happen. And I've been wrong. And who knows, I'll probably be wrong again because they just may end up beating Colorado. But I'm picking Colorado. I don't believe it. And if you look at my track record against Tampa in the playoffs, that means the Lightning are going to win. But by God, I'm sticking to it, and I'm going with the Avs.
Okay, he's going with the Avs, and is this the time we finally predict? I've been doing this against the Lightning all playoffs.
Well, they've been sitting for a month, so hopefully they should be fresh.
Yes, they should. They should be. The Avs should be pretty good.
This is going to be awesome.
Yeah,
it is. It's going to be fun. I can't. Well, you're right. I can't wait. I'm glad you brought it up because I think it's going to be a fantastic series.
Well, Darren, thank you for joining us, and excited to hear y'all's take on the AJ Brown situation with D-Mace coming up here in like 44 minutes, to be exact.
Yeah, I'll just serve it up to him and sit back. And
that's right.
Let him go. Wind him up and let him go.
It'll be a softball. It'll be pretty easy today. So appreciate you joining us, and look forward to hearing you here in just a little bit.
Always enjoy it. Thanks.
Darren McFarland, host Darren Donick and Chase, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll come back, react to what Darren had to say, as well as get to some of your texts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All that and more here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game Nashville app. You hear us every day, but you can also watch us on our streaming platforms live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming, of course, is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Big thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us before he goes on the DDC. A nice little tune-up for him before he goes on. And I'm sure with Derek Mason being on today for the first 2 hours, we know damn well what they're going to be talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Corned beef hash. I mean, it really should be talked about the entire day on this
station. And
Arby's
lacking the potato cakes. We do it every Friday at 12 for You Just Made the List, and I think they're probably going to extend that conversation.
By the way, a source says that Sean Henry, president, CEO, makes amazing homemade corned beef hash. So
Sean does.
Just throwing it out there, okay?
Shout out, okay.
I mean, remind me, Michelle, as a New Yorker, a native New Yorker like Sean.
He is too?
Yeah. He's from Long Island.
Huge Yankees fan.
Where are you on corned beef hash?
I wasn't really introduced to it until you brought it into my life, but I haven't tried it yet, Joe. Joe birthed it into my life.
Joe bestowed.
It's so weird to me. And you're not a vegetarian.
I'm not a vegetarian, no.
And you're from that region of the country, and you. But then again, you took that southern food thing, and what'd you get? Like 4 out of.
I got a 4 out of 32. Caroline Fenton told me to eat some frog legs with her.
Sure.
No.
I was like 28 out of 32, and I'm not originally from here. You know.
I haven't taken that, but I'm sure I'd probably be in that ballpark.
You'd be crushing
of 28.
Yeah. Joe told me to eat collard greens, and I remember just choking them down, and I was just like. He's like, these are the best ever. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I know. I mean, Gentry Essis and I went to Myrtle's in Knoxville for dinner after one of these games. The collard greens at Myrtle's.
Really?
Good stuff, man. Yes. Always eat collard greens. I do want to get the text line on some of this stuff because I'm driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com.
Lots of all stuff here.
Lots of all stuff. Again, the fans wore classes versus Catholics. Yeah, great.
It's funny.
That's great. I love it. Have fun. They cross the line sometimes, but that's fun. Chris from Atlanta, one thing definitely needs to be said. UT made a boatload of errors that allowed Notre Dame to stay in the game, not just yesterday, Friday as well. Agree. We can land-base Vitella for leaving Burns in, which was a mistake, but we need to be talking about Lipscomb's throwing error led to a two-run homer or the bad play that Luke had at first Friday. Had a great team this season, but mistakes cost us dearly this weekend. Again, Chris from Atlanta. No, I totally agree. I mean, look, Tennessee played bad baseball relative to what Tennessee has been doing all year. Their performance dipped collectively. They didn't, you know, they were not pitching well until then. You get Chase Dolander, who gives you an ace start Saturday to set up. And again, Chase Burns has given you an ace start yesterday. You just have to know when to go to the pen. You know, I mean, that's just. But fielding, I mean, they had a bunch of errors in this NCAA tournament. They had some guys at the plate, primarily Drew Gilbert, 3 for 20 in the NCAA tournament. Makes a huge base running mistake yesterday. Huge. So, you know, they did not play well. April in Portland, a very outspoken, I would say a very passionate Preds and Vols fan, says she agrees. Merchandise sold is hilarious. Classless versus Catholics, I'm with you. Fur coat, daddy hat, that's funny. F-bombs and middle finger to the outfield is not cool. But if that's the worst thing they ever do, who cares? I know I did some stupid stuff in my early 20s. I wish I could take that. Again, they crossed the line a few times. We can all agree with that. But they got – some people are painting them as like this just like renegade crew of, you know, like swearing, tobacco-spitting – you know, it's just exaggerated. Dennis on the text line says, I may be the exception, but I don't need a WWE-style show to enjoy baseball, but I understand a lot of fans and players needed to get excited about the game. And he also said, the players and coaches today accept antics that would have started fights not long ago. That's the thing. So yeah. I think you hit on something. College baseball is a little bit in your face. This is not some everybody, okay, and let's shake hands, and I'll never talk to the ump, never talk to the opponent. No, college baseball is confrontational. College baseball is in your face. The stomping on home plate. Pick a team. Pick your favorite team. Tell me if you watch your team that you don't see your team screaming at the other team sometimes. You don't see your team complaining to the ump sometimes. You don't see your team hit a huge home run and have a celebration that's a celebration, but also a little bit in the face of the opponent. I think you're. I don't think you're telling the truth. Tennessee took it to a new level overall. I would agree, but it this stuff kind of overshadowed a lot of things about this team. Again, the cartoon version of the Vols got a little bit too much attention to me.
Yeah, well, that's also like this. That was the thing about this baseball team that really like kind of pulled me in was that there was a lot of excitement because they made college baseball more interesting. I think we've talked more college baseball on these airwaves when Tennessee was winning all these games and they were doing their antics when, like, we never talk about a weekend series against Alabama in what? That was late March because of the – they.
I think it was in April, right? It was after the Vanderbilt series.
Yeah. Or we that Vanderbilt-Tennessee series got so much attention.
Which is awesome.
Which is awesome. Like, we never talk regular season college baseball like that, and it garnered so much attention. That, like, that's got to be good for the game. You know, like, the Fab Five was good for college basketball. People hated them then. But it drew a lot of eyes to regular season college basketball. This Tennessee baseball team drew a ton of eyes to regular season college baseball, when if they didn't do that, we wouldn't be that drawn to it. And I think that's honestly, it's good for the game, and it's good for the program, too, because even though they are the most polarizing team with more hated teams in the sport, I think it's really a positive. It's a net positive. And who knows? Maybe this loss is a big net positive for the program if they do end up winning down the road too, because it gives them that popularity. Kids are going to want to play for a coach like Tony Vitello, and this is not going to be the only year they win 50 games and have a chance to make history in the postseason. So definitely have a call. Daryl, if you want to hang on real quick, we got to pay some bills. We'll come back, get to your phones. We have more texts as well. A lot of conversation talking about the Vols' early exit against Notre Dame in the Super Regionals here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Continuing taking your calls and texts on our phone lines, driven by Hyundai. Our phone lines, WilsonCountyHyundai.com. There we go.
There it is.
My brain died for like 3 seconds. It was one of the
rest. Still doing better than your computer, though.
That's very true. This poor thing, man. It's gone through a lot. We've gone through a lot together, and today it needed to take five, take a breather, and come back, and have Joe take the Zoom solo for a little bit. But we are taking your phones. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Daryl in Columbia with some thoughts. What's up, Daryl?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I want to give my thoughts on just a couple, two or three thoughts real quick, and get your thoughts on them. I'm not a Tennessee fan. I don't like Tennessee, but let me tell you, all you Vol fans, don't hang your heads, because it's so hard. I'm a South Carolina Gamecock grad, and we were synonymous with the NCAA tournament, Super Regionals, and championships for quite a while, about 20 years, 25 years. We stink now. But we know how hard it is to get. And Vanderbilt does too. Vanderbilt played that Super Regional against Michigan, and Vanderbilt team was almost as good as Tennessee's team that year. And Vanderbilt had to learn step by step to get to how to get to Omaha. Vitello's a great coach. Tennessee has arrived because you got fans like me saying, oh, I'm so glad they lost. Really happy. Mm-hmm. But that's what you want. That's mm-hmm. how you know you've arrived. And one other thought, the SEC tournament at Hoover, if you want to feel the energy, it's not just in football, but if you want to feel the energy of the hatred and rivalries, go down to Hoover to the tournament one year and see Ole Miss play Mississippi State with all the cowbells, or LSU, who comes even if their team's not in the SEC tournament. And they're arrogant. And the Whistlers from Vanderbilt. If you really feel the rivalries for SEC baseball in Hoover, because unlike football, you've got 90,000 Tennessee fans. You might have a spattering in one corner of a Florida or a Georgia. If you ever want to feel the SEC energy for baseball, go down to Hoover and experience that. Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, thank you for your call, Daryl.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I think he nailed it. I think this is all good for Tennessee. The point he made with, as a Tennessee fan, you should kind of take pride in that teams are dancing on your graves because you are a legitimate threat and you're going nowhere and you're going to be this way for a long time. And I agree a ton. And like, I think it's great for Tennessee baseball because you're winning, you know, and there's a text on our text line right now. An unnamed texter says you cannot put a dollar amount of damage done to the University of Tennessee nationally. That is how bad of a look it is for Tennessee. And I disagree. Like, if you want to talk about antics, like, whatever, but like in the early 2000s, Miami football had antics like that. And they won, and they benefited from it greatly. What's really going to hurt is if you're losing games and you're irrelevant. Yeah. That's when it hurts. When fan bases check out and they don't buy tickets to come to games, and then there's that burnout or that indifference in your fan base, then yeah, that could hurt you, especially with a large dollar amount. But this Tennessee baseball team, the attention they've got and the interest they've garnered in Knoxville – is great, and some of that is because they are a very in-your-face baseball team.
Yeah, same texter says, if I was the president of Tennessee, the AD, I'd be trying to get rid of this staff and put the word out their behavior is not wanted at Tennessee. You would never see an LSU or Mississippi State team act like this or embrace it. I mean, I cannot believe it. Is this serious?
I cannot believe it.
That just makes me mad.
Not sure if serious. If the president or AD tried to get rid of this staff right now, then that person should be fired immediately.
The AD will be done. Yeah, that's, you will no longer have a job.
I mean, it's preposterous. Now, let's go to some reasonable arguments. Dennis, you know, who is, you know, makes reasonable arguments and also fantastic illustrations. It was over the top because the team and their fans encourage the cartoon image of the team. It's like the A.J. Brown stuff. Things are getting overblown because he keeps fanning the flames, taking bait. Well, look, I would agree that they leaned into it.
They embraced it.
They embraced it, for sure. I think they liked it. And as soon as that developed over the year, it was going to be very simple. It was like they are either going to win and just, again, like Jordan Beck, that finger, you know, rounding the bases, that would be the perfect representation of what they would have done to everyone. Yes, we are the champs, and you can, you know, here, you know what I'm saying.
Deal with it.
Now, it was also made it so that if they came up short, they're going to hear about it, and they are, and they should, and that's what's great. I mean, I love fandom. It's just look at yourself and tell me you wouldn't love this to be your team. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Come on, you know you would. SL in Knoxville says, maybe the problem with UT baseball is the adults in the room setting the wrong standard, condoning, encouraging the stuff that went over the line. A lot of us are tired of bullies never facing consequences in general. Tony V had plenty of chances to say what was enough and didn't appear interested. I just, look, again, I love stories like Tim Corbin, and I'm not just saying this because I wrote this story. I love stories like Tim Corbin, Luke Smith, Louisville.
Nice plug.
Louisville. Luke Smith is screaming F-bombs at Vanderbilt, striking him out, just get the F off the field, right? And it becomes a viral moment, and then he ends up losing in that game, and he gets just avalanched on, right?
Destroyed.
And Corbin tells his team, and by the way, if you go back and watch replays of that, this pertains to this discussion, go back and watch various angles of that.
Oh, they were giving it back to him. It was going both ways.
Oh, they were giving it back to him. I didn't see Tim Corbin in the dugout like, oh, you be quieter, you're in trouble, right? But what Corbin did do was at the end of that game said, you protect that kid. You know, we're not going to lay into him and dance on him now that he's had this moment. You protect him. And they did. They didn't say one cross thing about him. And I think that's awesome. That said, again, these are all college kids, and at times they do step outside themselves and do things, and all these coaches have that at times. Could Vitello have, you know, maybe told Drew Gilbert to tone it down a little bit here and there? I guess, but I think that Drew Gilbert's game is playing on the edge.
Playing with that kind of excitement, too. I mean, like, he's a very emotional player, and I mean, Vitello said that, too. Like, it's an emotional game, emotional players, like, I think he's acknowledged maybe that sometimes it does. Like, they do become what he referred to him yesterday as, maniacs.
Yes, maniacs. Yeah. Yes.
But, like, that's the edge they play with. And that they're maybe not them. They don't be 57-9 this year if they don't play with that edge. You got every competitor finds it somewhere, you know. That's why, like, example, like the Alabama quarterback, whenever they went, who was a five-star prospect in high school, whenever they win a national championship, it's like, no one ever believed in me. It's like, well, not true, because you were a five-star recruit in high school. You're playing at Alabama. The thing is, everyone believes in you, but you need at least one sliver of doubt to give you that motivation to put you over the edge to become a champion. Like, that happens a lot. Yeah, a lot of people find it in different ways.
Michael Jordan found, you know, everybody saw the documentary. He found slights in, what, Michelle? What? He found a slight, he didn't make eye contact in the steakhouse with me. Okay, I'm going to get mad about, everybody at that point, Michael Jordan's the most popular athlete in the world, best athlete in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loved him, and he still was finding, like, things like that. So, yeah, everybody tries to find that. Drew Gilbert, clearly, and again, I'm going to tell you, the absolute most soft-spoken, probably, like, humble, nice kid on the whole team is also out of hand on the field. I think that's pretty clearly he used that, right? That was him. He's also, like, 5'9", had medical issues as a kid, couldn't even play Little League baseball until he was, in eighth or, seventh grade or something. Like, there's a lot to his story. All that people know about him is just a dude who F-bombs umps, there's always more to it than that. And there are a lot of guys on this team, on this Tennessee team. You know, Beck and Gilbert get all the attention. They're leaving, by the way. A lot of guys on this Tennessee team who didn't have that, didn't play with that, didn't – you know what I mean? I mean, yes, Vitello at times, bumping an ump, throwing a bat. He also went over the edge. But, my gosh, it worked pretty well. I'd keep doing exactly what they're doing. The same texter on name says the entire staff should have been fired, reiterating. Again, that's definitely up there for dumb takes I've heard lately.
Yeah, there's been a lot. And, of course, obviously, it's emotional for the fans, too. It's so the take quake that has kind of gone around in the last little bit has magnified pretty high on the take quake Richter scale, I would say.
I like take quake. I'm definitely stealing that, buddy.
Yeah, that is an all-timer for me. I think I got that from PFT comment or something like that. I've seen it on Twitter, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to use that. But a loss like that prematurely is grounds for a take quake, and the take quake warning is on us because, obviously, it's going to happen when you're that good and you're that brash, you're that confident, and you fall short of not even the event of the goal of what you're trying to win of the College World Series. So
April in Portland says, Vitello said in an interview, Gilbert spilled over, you can't take it back. He didn't defend his F-bombs. No, but I think the text earlier, April, was saying maybe he should have done more about it, tried to curtail it, I'm not saying he should have, but it's a different thing. Yes, Vitello did acknowledge, Gilbert went too far. Liam says, Joe, you keep saying we can dance on UT's grave, but you don't like how it's being done? Of course we're going to focus on their antics, celebrate the loss. No, listen. No. I do it. Talk your trash today. Talk your trash. Have fun with
do it.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm just pointing out two things. One, again, the trying to make this like a karma thing because of their antics when they got beat in baseball and they didn't handle the pressure and Notre Dame was really good, I think is misguided. Also, you would love this team if they were your team.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, really more even from the UT perspective, because I see some UT fans who are like, oh, this is come back to get them. Like, leaning into the same thing. If I'm a UT fan, you're devastated today. But yeah, I would want this team to keep having the same approach. You're not going to have the exact same approach because Beck and Gilbert are leaving. They are. How many times have we used the Vitello word today that he said yesterday? I mean, he said maniacs. We got a couple maniacs. I mean,
maniacs, yes.
Like them leaving the team. I promise you, next year it's not going to be the exact same energy or vibe. It's just. Because they brought it. They really.
The motor of that. Yeah. That kind of.
So, but in terms of like they have to have some different approach or they, it's just all, to me, very exaggerated.
Yeah. Agreed.
But no, Liam, talk the trash, man. No.
This
I can disagree with points on you, but you should go find Vol Twitter. Go get them.
Take your victory lap today. I'd say my thing is it's not the reason they lost. Prematurely. It's not the antics as to why they lost. They lost because they were not a better baseball team than Notre Dame on two of the 3 days. They should have been a better baseball team than Notre Dame. That's all there is to it.
Yep.
But big game tonight in the NBA Game 5. Celtics, Warriors, which you can hear on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And it's presented by FanDuel, America's number one sports book. We'll discuss that next. Robbie and Rex are at ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Final segment of the show here on Monday morning before handing you off to Darren Donick and Chase starting at 10 a.m. What better way to end this show, Joe, as the basketball enthusiast along with Michelle of the station, to break down Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. We haven't got to talk about Game 4 much because that was on Friday. It's kind of old news by now, but Steph putting up an all-timer performance. 43 points on 26 shots to keep the Warriors from staring down the barrel of a 3-1 series deficit. That's an all-timer there.
As the members of the Tennessee baseball beat will tell you, because we got that on the TV, right?
Yes.
In the game. There were a few moments where like, dude, you okay? Because I was hyped. I was hyped for that one, as the kids say. Or wait, is it hype? I was hype. Was I hype or was I hyped?
Hyped, because it was past tense.
But yeah. You can use tense.
You were hype in the moment.
Yeah. Hype in the moment, hyped then.
I feel like kids a lot of times just say hype. But regardless.
Joe was lit.
It was, yeah, there you go. Yes, exactly. It was awesome. It was incredible. And I Steph, yes, all-time performance. And he's having an all-time series. I mean, could he still be the MVP? I think he could be of this series.
Potentially. I just don't like doing that on principle.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Regardless, another part of that I thought was huge was Steve Kerr making the tough decision to sit Draymond Green for a stretch and then doing the offense-defense thing with Draymond and Jordan Poole.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked pretty well. And then Draymond, who, yeah, but look, he struggled, and certainly in one game in particular, he was bad. He had a really good game too, but he struggled a lot of this series. Their length mm-hmm. has really bothered him.
Yep.
And they're just, you know, if the Warriors use him in a ball screen, I mean, you're just going to get Steph. There's no reason to give him any consideration. It's been problematic for them. And then Draymond comes in and gets a huge offensive rebound, gets a couple big assists. You know, he makes winning
where
plays
his value
too.
Is. Yes, where exactly. His value lies on the offensive side of
but
the ball.
That was, you know, to me, that's Steve Kerr making tough decisions at the moment. Draymond didn't like it, but mm-hmm. it worked out well. That, I thought that was a really good coaching quarter for Steve Kerr.
Oh, and the way they've constructed this defense, like, it's amazing. When you look at the rosters, the Celtics have a lot more better individual defenders. There's really not a minus defender on the floor. You could say Tatum at times is a minus defender, but in terms of the rotation they actually play, like, Daniel Tyus hasn't played in the last two games because he just drops every ball screen and then the Warriors pick him apart. But if you look at the Warriors team, like, Jordan Poole defensively is unplayable at times in the series. Nemanja Bjelica is unplayable sometimes in the series and has gotten, like, minutes out of necessity. And obviously, Klay Thompson isn't what he used to be defensively because, obviously, when you tear your ACL and your Achilles in a one-year span, you're going to lose a lot of the lateral quickness that made you an elite defender to begin with.
He's clearly not what he used to be there.
Yeah, and it's all scheme. Like, Steph Curry is one of your better him and Draymond, which, of course, I think still is a top three defensive player in the NBA and will be for a while until he starts slowing down physically. But him and Steph are, like, some of the best defensive players on that team. And
and I'm so glad you said that, because so many people still think Steph is just, like, you know. And granted, yeah, sometimes Tatum sees him and just goes to the rim. And
Jason Tatum's really good, so he's going to score a lot when he does that.
But I agree. Steph has become so much better mm-hmm. defensively than I ever would have guessed he could have. He's just become – he's gotten so much stronger physically.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible. Like, he's
– and they're smart defenders. That's the thing. Like, he – knows how to funnel into better defenders. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're not a great on-ball defender, know where your help is, where the most opportune way for the player that you're guarding to dribble into a double team or make them to where they can pass it out. Like, this was the number one team in defensive rating all year long. The defense is what drives this Golden State Warriors team. Like, in the regular season, they were below average offensively, ranked 17th in offensive rating for a reason. Like, in obviously game four, Steph Curry is going to get the amount of attention because of his all-time performance on the offensive end. But nobody else, I thought, had a great game on offense for the Warriors.
No.
Almost not even a good one. I mean, Andrew Wiggins kept him in the game with a couple
Wiggins
threes early.
Wiggins had some huge offensive rebounds in the fourth. Huge.
Huge
he
offensive
He was big
rebounds.
Overall.
Yeah. And then defensively, he grabbed 13 defensive rebounds. What's the one thing that killed the Warriors in game three? Was the big lineup with Horford and Williams absolutely picking them apart on that side of the floor. Wiggins finally toughened up a little bit, boxed somebody out, and got rebounds when they really needed to. The Celtics went cold from three-point range, which they have been known to do at spurts in these playoffs, but what they kill you is by grabbing a lot of offensive rebounds. And with Wiggins keeping them off the boards, and Draymond too, that really kept them from being able to, instead of being a 17-10 run, a 17-3 run, because they just had no opportunities to score. Like, that's where Golden State's dangerous, is the defensive end, their defensive scheming, and those defensive adjustments. They're going to continue. They're going to habitually score either 107, 108 points, or like I think they scored 100 in the game three loss. Like, their scoring totals in game one, 108, game two, 107, game three, 100, and then game four, 107. They're not lighting up the scoreboard. No, they're winning because they're like what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, and Boston is fantastic, as you point out, defensively. Mm-hmm. So what's the adjustment for Boston tonight? What do you think we're going to see?
I think a lot of it is, if I'm Ime Udoka, I'm doubling on ball screens, and they make Steph pass out of it and make Draymond Green hit open shots, even if it's Clay. Like, Clay has had some bad shooting nights.
Even if it's Poole, I think I'd let anybody else beat me.
Yeah. At this point, like, you're not going to be able to live with yourself if you just play under screens or whatever and let Steph shoot basically 14 threes and have a lot of those clean looks. You got to make the other guys beat you at this point. Like, sacrifice the role to Kevon Looney and have him shoot a contested shot near the rim, because he's not comfortable doing that every possession. Like, my thing is, do what the Toronto Raptors did against Steph in the 2019 finals. Every time the ball came past half court, you're throwing an extra body at him, because that's getting the ball out of his hands quickly. And then that's obviously easier said than done, because Steph moves so well without the ball.
Well, that's the problem.
He's going to find a way to get it back. Maybe have someone, almost like a box and one type thing, where someone's on Steph Curry at all times and you're giving help anytime the ball goes in his hands. Because I could live with Andrew Wiggins hits a tough shot. Draymond Green, who has not hit anything from outside all series, live with him hitting, like, playing out of his mind. But make them have to do that. So if I'm the Celtics,
it sounds good.
That.
But Steph somehow finds a way, even at the last, like the play with, you know, Peyton really making a nice play, getting it to him, pump fake. Then he gets a shot. I mean, usually they don't run ball screens this often. They've been running way more ball screens. Boston's made them do that. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, they're usually, that offense is Draymond at the top of the key, and it's all the off ball.
Because Steph might be the best off-ball player in the history of basketball.
Yeah, which is why he's not a point guard, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I always hesitate to put him in the top, like, point guard list. He's just a scoring guard.
No, he's the definition of a two guard. He is incredible at the what's the most important skill other than shooting the ball? It's being able to set people up and get off those screens, and he's astoundingly good at it.
Which is wild, considering how good he is with the ball.
Right.
He is probably better without it, because that's how he's able to generate all these looks.
So he's a top what player right now? Because we have to do lists.
We have to make it a list.
It has to be a list thing.
I'd say top 15.
Yeah.
That's fair. Top five influential.
I mean,
top
look, 15, I've always contended, and we don't have time to argue this, but Isaiah Thomas is the best player ever shorter than 6'5 in NBA history. Steph is.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
And don't you ever bring up John Stockton again.
Oh, we're going to. We might do 4 hours on that tomorrow. Joe, who do you got tonight?
I got to go with the Warriors at home. I know Michelle's going with the Seas.
Celtics!
Big Celtics fan over there. Wrong again the other day. Wrong again.
Celtics 8-0 after losses in the playoffs this year.
That's a good point.
I think they go 9-0 this year.
Ooh.
Ime Udoka is the king of the defensive adjustment. I think it might happen tonight. But we'll find out. We'll discuss it tomorrow. Make sure to stay cool out there, Nashville. It's going to be a hot one today. Darren Donick and Chase is next here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.